Galadriel, how nice to see you, Jondalar called out as they neared. A man turned around and smiled. Jondalar, Aayla, he said, approaching them with both hands stretched out to them. He clasped Jondalar's hands. In the name of the great Earth Mother, I greet you, Galadriel said. The man was nearly as tall as Jondalar, somewhat older, and nearly as dark as the Zelindani man was light. Jondalar's hair was light yellow. Galadriel's was dark brown, but with lighter streaks and thinning on top. His blue eyes were not as striking as Jondalar's, but the contrast to his darker skin coloring made them intriguingly noticeable. His skin is not brown like Rainik's, Aayla thought. It's more like he has been out in the sun a lot, but I don't think it fades much in winter. In the name of Dani, you are welcome to our summer meeting, Galadriel, and welcome to the rest of your traveling cave, Jondalar replied. I didn't know you would come. How long have you been here? We arrived before noon, but we shared a meal with the second cave before we set up camp. The leader's mate is a far cousin of mine. I didn't even know she had two born together. You're related to Belladora? Kimmeran and I are H-mates. We went through our manhood rites together, Jondalar explained. I was the tallest one there and felt out of place until Kimmeran came. I was so glad to see him. I understand how you felt, and you are even taller than me, Galadriel turned his attention to Aayla. Greetings to you, he said, grasping her outstretched hands.
In the name of the great mother of all, welcome, Aayla replied.
And who is this pretty little thing? The visitor said, smiling at the baby.
This is Jondalar, Aayla said.
Jondalar, your daughter with his eyes. That's a good name, Galadriel said. I hope you are coming tonight. I have a special story for you.
For me?
Aayla said with surprise. Yes. It's about a woman who has a special way with animals. It's been very well liked everywhere we've been, Galadriel said with a big grin.
Do you know someone who understands animals? I'd like to meet her, Aayla said.
You already know her.
But the only person I know like that is me, Aayla said, then blushed when she understood.
Of course. I couldn't pass up such a good story, but I don't give her your name, and I changed some other things. Many people ask if the story is about you, but I never tell them. It makes it more interesting. I'll be telling it when we get a good crowd. Come and listen. Oh, we will, Jondalar said. He had been watching Aayla, and from her expression, he didn't think she was particularly happy about the idea of a storyteller making up stories about her and telling them to all the caves. He knew many people who would love the attention, but he didn't think that she would. She already got more attention than she wanted, but he couldn't blame Galadriel. He was a storyteller, and Aayla's story was a good one. It's about you too, Jondalar. I couldn't leave you out, the storyteller said with a wink. You're the one who was gone on a journey for 5 years and brought her back with you. Jondalar winced to himself to hear that. It wasn't the first time that stories had been told about him, and they weren't always ones he wanted to have spread around. But it was best not to complain or make anything out of it. That would just add to the story. Storytellers loved to tell stories about individuals who were known, and people loved to hear them. Sometimes they used real names, and other times, especially if they wanted to embellish the story, they would make up a name so people would have to guess who they were about. Jondalar grew up hearing such stories, and he loved them too, but he loved the elder legends and histories of the Zelindani better. He'd heard many stories about his mother when she was leader of the Ninth Cave, and the story about the great love of Marthona and Dalinar had been told so many times it was almost legend. Aayla and Jondalar chatted with him a while, then wandered toward the camp of the third cave, stopping along the way to talk with various people they knew. As the evening deepened, it grew quite dark. Ayla stopped for a moment to look up. The moon was new, and without its glowing light to moderate their brilliance, the stars filled the night sky with an awe-inspiring profusion.
"The sky is so full. I don't know the right word," Ayla said,
feeling a touch of impatience with herself.
"It is beautiful, but more than that. It makes me feel small, but in a way that makes me feel good. It is greater than us, greater than everything."
"When the stars are bright like that, it is a wondrous sight," Jandalar said. While the bright stars did not bestow as much radiance as the moon would have, it did provide almost enough illumination to see their way. But the multitude of stars was not the only light. Every camp had great bonfires and torches, and lamps had been placed along paths between camps. When they reached the camp of the third cave, Proliva was there with her sister Lavila and their mother Valima. They all greeted each other.
"I can't believe how much Janela has grown in just a few moons," Lavila said. "And she's so beautiful. She has Jandalar's eyes, but she looks like you."
Ayla smiled at the compliment to her baby, but deflected the one directed at her.
"I think she looks like Marthona, not me. I'm not beautiful."
"You don't know what you look like, Ayla," Jandalar said. "You never look at a polished reflector or even a pool of still water. You are beautiful."
Ayla changed the subject.
"You are really showing now, Lavila," Ayla said. "How are you feeling?"
"Once I got over feeling sick in the morning, I've been feeling good," Lavila said, "vigorous and strong, although lately I get tired easily. I want to sleep late and take naps in the day, and sometimes if I stand for a long time, my back hurts."
"Sounds about right, wouldn't you say?" Valima said, smiling at her daughter. "Just the way you're supposed to feel."
"We're setting up an area to take care of children so their mothers and mates can go to the Mother Festival and relax," Proliva said. "You can leave Janela if you want. There will be singing and dancing, and some people had already drunk too much before I left."
"Did you know the traveling storytellers are here?" Jandalar asked.
"I heard they were supposed to come, but I didn't know they had arrived," Proliva said.
"We talked to Galeadol. He said he wanted us to come and listen. He said he has a story for Ayla," Jandalar said. "I think it's a thinly disguised story about her. We should probably go and listen so we'll know what people will be talking about tomorrow."
"Are you going, Proliva?"
Ayla asked, as the woman was putting down her sleeping baby.
"It was a big feast, and I've been working on it for many days," Proliva said. "I think I'd rather stay here and watch the little ones with just a few women. It would be more restful. I've been to my share of mother festivals."
"Maybe I should stay and watch the children, too," Ayla said.
"No, you should go. Mother festivals are still new to you, and you need to become familiar with them, especially if you're learning to be a Zelandani. Here, give me that little one of yours. I haven't cuddled her for days," Proliva said.
"Let me nurse her first," Ayla said. "I'm feeling rather full anyway."
"Lavila, you should go too, especially since the storytellers are here."
"You too, Mother," Proliva said.
"The storytellers will be here for many days. I can see them later. And I've been to my share of mother festivals, too. You've been so busy we haven't had much time to visit." "I'd rather stay here with you," Valima said. "But you should go, Lavila."
"I'm not sure. Jandakam is already there, and I told him I'd meet him. But I'm tired already. Maybe I'll just go for a while to hear the storytellers," she said.
"Joharan is there, too. He almost has to be, just to keep an eye on some of the young men. I hope he takes some time to enjoy himself. T Tell him about the storytellers, Jandalar. He always enjoys them.
I will if I can find him, Jandalar said.
He wondered if Proliva was staying away to give her mate the freedom to enjoy the Mother Festival. Although everyone knew they could take partners other than their mates, he knew that some people didn't necessarily want to watch their own mate couple with someone else. He knew he didn't. It would be very hard for him to see Ayla go off with some other man. Several men had already shown an interest in her, the Zelandani of the 26th, for example, and even the storyteller, Galliadol. He knew that such jealousy was frowned on, but he couldn't help how he felt. He just hoped he would be able to hide it. When they returned to the large gathering area, Lavila quickly spied Jondakam and hurried ahead, but Ayla stopped at the edge just to watch for a while. Almost all the people who were attending the summer meeting at this location had already arrived, and she was still not entirely comfortable with so many people in one place, especially in the beginning. Jandalar understood and waited with her. At first glance, the large space seemed filled with a vast, amorphous throng surging in an eddying mass, like a great roiling river. But as she watched, Ayla began to see that the crowd had formed itself into several groups, generally around or near a large fire. In one area near the edge, close to the storyteller's camp, many people were gathered around three or four people talking with exaggerated gestures who were standing on a platform-like construction made of wood and hard rawhide that raised them somewhat above the crowd so they could be seen more easily. Those nearest to the platform were sitting on the ground or on logs or rocks that had been dragged closer. Almost directly opposite, across the gathering area, other people were dancing and singing to the sound of flutes, drums, and other percussion musical instruments. Ayla felt drawn to both and was trying to decide where to go first. In another area, people were gambling, using various tokens and gaming pieces. And in a nearby area, people were getting refills of their favorite beverages. She noticed Larimar doling out portions of his barma with a false smile.
"Garnering favors," Jandalar said, almost as though he knew what she was thinking.
She wasn't aware of the look of distaste that had appeared on her face when she saw the man. Ayla saw that Tremida was among those who were standing around waiting for more of his barma, but Larimar wasn't offering any to her. She turned toward the nearby group who were picking at what was left of the food, which had been gathered together and offered for whoever wanted more. Throughout the entire space, people stood together, talking and laughing, or drifting from one place to another for no apparent reason. Ayla didn't immediately notice the undercurrent of activity around the darker edges of the crowd. Then she happened to catch sight of a young woman with bright red hair, whom she recognized as Falara's friend Galea. She was walking away from the eating area with the young man from the third cave who had joined the lion hunt, Ayla recalled. They had chosen to partner together to watch out for each other. Ayla watched the young couple as they headed for the darkened periphery of the gathering and saw when they paused to embrace. She felt a moment of embarrassment. She hadn't meant to observe them when they were being intimate. Then she saw that there were others in certain areas away from the main activities who also appeared to be closely involved with each other. Ayla felt herself flush. Jandalar smiled to himself. He had seen where she was looking. The Zelandani tended not to stare at such activity either. It wasn't so much a matter of embarrassment. Intimacy was commonplace, and they just ignored it. He had traveled far and was aware that people's customs could be different. But she had, too. He knew that she had seen people together before. They lived in such close quarters, it couldn't be avoided. She must have seen similar activity at the summer meeting the year before. He wasn't quite sure what was causing her discomfort. He was going to ask, but then he saw Lavila and Jandakam returning and decided to wait until later.
her discomfiture stemmed from her early years when she had lived with the clan. It had been strongly stressed to her that some things, even though they could be observed, were not supposed to be seen. The stones that outlined each hearth in the cave of Brun's clan were like invisible walls. One did not see past the boundary stones, did not look into the private areas of another man's hearth. People averted their eyes or assumed the far-off look of gazing into space, anything to avoid seeming to stare into the area enclosed by the stones. And as a rule, they were careful not to stare inadvertently. Staring was part of the body sign language of the clan and had specific meanings. An intense look from a leader, for example, could be a reprimand. When she realized what she had seen, Ayla had quickly looked in another direction and saw Lavila and Jondakam approaching. She felt an odd sense of relief. She touched cheeks and greeted them affectionately, as though she hadn't seen them for a while. "We're going to watch the storytellers," Lavila said. "I was just trying to decide if I wanted to listen to stories or music," Ayla said. "If you are going to watch the storytellers, maybe I'll go with you."
"So will I," Jondalar said.
When they arrived at the place, there seemed to be a break in the performance. A narrative had apparently just been concluded, and a new one hadn't yet begun. People were milling around. Some were leaving, some were arriving, some changing positions. Ayla looked over the area to get a sense of the place. The low platform, though empty now, was big enough to hold three or four people with room to move about. There were two somewhat rectangular fire trenches, not directly in front of the platform, but on either side, for light rather than heat. In between and on either side of the fires were several logs arranged somewhat haphazardly in rows and a few good-sized stones, all of them covered with stuffed pads for easier sitting. There was an open space in front of the logs where people were sitting on the ground, many on some kind of ground covering, like woven grass floor mats or hides. Several people who had been sitting on a log near the front stood up and walked away. Lavila headed purposefully in that direction and sat down on the soft pad that covered the tree trunk. Jondakam quickly sat beside her. Then they claimed space beside them for their friends who had been delayed by someone who greeted them along the way. While they were exchanging pleasantries, Galiadol approached.
"You did decide to come," he said,
bending down to greet Ayla, touching his cheek to hers, and, Jondalar thought, holding it there too long. Ayla felt Galiadol's warm breath on her neck and noticed his pleasant, manly smell, different from the one she was most familiar with. She also noticed the tension in Jondalar's jaw, in spite of his smile. Several people were crowding around them, and Ayla thought they probably wanted the storyteller's attention. She had noticed that many people liked to flock around Galiadol, especially young women, and some were looking at her with a kind of expectancy, as though they were waiting for something. She didn't think she liked it.
"Lavila and Jondakam are holding places in front for us," Jondalar said. "We should go and claim them."
She smiled at Jondalar, and they went to join their friends. But when they arrived, some other people were also sitting on the log, taking some of the space Lavila and Jondakam had been holding. They all crowded together, then waited.
"I wonder what's taking so long," Jondakam said, getting a bit impatient.
Jondalar noticed that more people were arriving.
"I think they're waiting to see how many are coming. You know how it is. Once they start, storytellers don't like to have a lot of people moving around. It disrupts the telling. They don't mind a few slipping in quietly, but most people don't like to come in the middle of a story either. They'd rather hear it from the beginning. I think a lot of people were waiting until they were done with the story they were on. When they saw people moving away, they decided that was the time to come."
Galiadol and several other people had stepped up to the low platform.
They waited until people noticed them. When everyone stopped talking and it became quiet, the tall, dark-haired man began.
Far away, in the land of the dawning sun.
That's the way all stories start, Jandalar whispered to Ayla, as though he was pleased that it had begun right.
There lived a woman and her mate and her three children. The eldest was a boy named Kimikal.
When the storyteller mentioned the first of the woman's offspring, a young man who was also on the platform stepped forward and made a slight bow, implying that he was the one referred to.
The next one was a girl named Karela.
A young woman did a pirouette that ended in a bow when he mentioned the second child.
The youngest one was a boy named Wolofon.
Another young man pointed to himself and grinned proudly when the third child was announced. There was a slight murmur in the audience and a few chuckles when the name of the youngest child was mentioned as people perceived a connection with Ayla's name for her four-legged hunter. Although he wasn't shouting, Ayla noticed that the storyteller's voice could be heard very well by the entire audience. He had a special way of speaking that was powerful, clear, and expressive. It made her think of her visit to the cave with the Zelandani of the 26th and his acolyte, and the sounds the three of them had made in front of the cave before crawling in. It occurred to her that Galeadol could have become one of the Zelandania if he wished.
Though they were old enough, none of the young people were mated yet. Their cave was small, and they were closely related to most of the people near their age. The mother was beginning to worry that they would have to go far away to find mates, and she might not see them again. She had heard of an old Zelandani who lived alone in a cave some distance up the river to the north. Some people talked in whispers about her, saying she could make things happen, but she might exact a payment that would be hard to make. The mother decided to go and find her, the storyteller said. One day, after she returned, the woman sent her children out to the edge of a stream to collect cattail roots. When they arrived, they met three other young people, a girl about the age of Kimikal, a boy about the age of Karela, and a girl about the age of Wolofon.
This time, the first young man on the platform smiled coquettishly when the older girl was mentioned. The young woman took a bravado stance, and the other young man assumed the posture of a shy young girl. There was laughter from the audience. When Ayla and Jandalar looked at each other, both were smiling.
The three newcomers were strangers who had recently arrived from the land to the south. As all of them had been taught was appropriate, they greeted each other and introduced themselves, reciting their important names and ties. "We have come looking for food," the eldest visitor explained.
Galeadol changed the timbre of his voice when he spoke as the young woman.
"There are many cattails here. We can share them," Karela said.
The young woman mouthed the words Galeadol spoke, again changing his tone.
They all started pulling cattail roots out of the soft mud by the edge of the stream, Kimikal helping the older foreign girl, Karela showing the middle boy where to dig, and Wolofon pulling out some roots for the shy younger girl. But the fair young woman wouldn't accept them. Wolofon could see that his brother and sister were enjoying the company of their pleasurable new friends, becoming very friendly.
The laughter was now quite loud. Not only were the innuendos obvious, the young man portraying the older brother and the young woman on the platform were in an exaggerated embrace, while the younger brother looked on with envy. When Galeadol narrated, he changed his voice for each character as he spoke for them, while the others on the raised platform demonstrated, often very dramatically.
"These are good cattails. Why won't you eat them?"
Wolofon asked the appealing stranger.
"I cannot eat cattails," the young woman said. "I can only eat meat."
When he spoke as the woman, he pitched his voice quite high.
Wolofon didn't know what to do. "Maybe I can hunt for some meat for you," he said,
but he knew he wasn't a very good hunter. He usually went along on game drives. He meant well, but he was a little lazy and never tried very hard to hunt himself. He went back to the home of his mother's cave.
"Kimmikal and Karela shared cattails with a woman and man from the south," he told his mother. "They have found mates, but the woman I want can't eat cattails. She can only eat meat, and I'm not a very good hunter. How can I find food for her?"
Galiadol related. Ayla wondered if sharing cattails had some second meaning that she wasn't familiar with, like a joke she didn't understand, since the storyteller went from eating cattails together to being mated in the next breath.
"There is an old Zelandani who lives alone in a cave north of here near the river," his mother said. "She may be able to help you. But be careful what you ask for. You may get exactly what you want."
Galiadol again changed the timbre of his voice when he spoke as the mother.
Wolofon set out to find the old Zelandani. He traveled upriver for many days, looking into all the caves he happened to see along the way. He was almost ready to give up, but he saw a small cave high up in a cliff and decided that would be the last cave he would investigate. He found an old woman sitting in front of it, who seemed to be sleeping. He approached quietly, not wanting to disturb her, but he was curious and looked at her carefully.
Galiadol continued.
Her clothes were nondescript, the same kind of thing most people wore, though rather shapeless and shabby. But she wore many necklaces made of a variety of materials, beads and shells, several pierced animal teeth and claws, animals carved out of ivory, bone, antler, and wood, some of stone and amber, and disc-shaped medallions with animals carved on them. There were so many objects on the necklaces, Wolofon couldn't even see them all. But even more impressive were her facial tattoos. They were so intricate and embellished, he could hardly see her skin under all the squares, swirls, curlicues, and flourishes. She was, without doubt, a Zelandani of great stature, and Wolofon was a little fearful of her. He didn't know if he should bother her with his little request.
The woman on the platform had seated herself, and although she hadn't changed clothes, the way she wrapped them around herself gave the impression of an old woman in the shapeless clothing Galiadol had described.
Wolofon decided to leave, but as he turned to go, he heard a voice.
"What do you want from me, boy?" she said.
Galiadol's voice took on the sound of an older woman, not thin and quavery, but powerful and mature.
Wolofon gulped, then turned around. He introduced himself properly, then said, "My mother told me you might be able to help me."
"What is your problem?"
"I met a woman who came from the south. I wanted to share cattails with her, but she said she couldn't eat cattails. She could only eat meat. I love her, and I would hunt for her, but I am not a very good hunter. Can you help me to become a good hunter?"
"Are you sure she wants you to hunt for her?" the old Zelandani asked. "If she doesn't want your cattails, it may be that she won't want your meat either. Did you ask her?"
"When I offered her the cattails, she said she couldn't eat them. Not that she didn't want to. And when I told her I would hunt for her, she didn't say no," Wolofon said.
The voice Galiadol used for the young man sounded hopeful, and the expression of the young man on the platform mimicked the tone.
"You know that all it takes to become a good hunter is practice, lots of practice," the old Zelandani told him.
Yes, I know. I should have practiced more.
The young man on the platform looked down as though contrite. But you didn't practice, did you? Now, because a young woman interests you, you want to suddenly become a hunter. Is that right?
Galliadol's tone as the old Zelandani became a reprimand.
I suppose so.
The young man looked even more ashamed.
But I adore her.
You must always earn whatever you get. If you don't want to make the effort to practice, you must pay for the skill some other way. You give your effort to practice, or you give something else. What are you willing to give?
The old woman asked. I'll give anything.
The audience gasped, knowing it was the wrong thing to say.
You could still take the time to practice and learn how to hunt, the old Zelandani said.
But she won't want to wait until I learn how to hunt well. I adore her. I just want to bring her meat so she will love me. I wish I was born knowing how to hunt.
Suddenly, the audience and the ones on the raised platform detected a commotion in their midst. Chapter 11. Wolf was slipping through the crowd, occasionally brushing against someone's leg, but gone before they could catch more than a glimpse of what had touched them. Though most people were familiar with him, he was still a surprise that could bring a gasp or a squeal of apprehension when he was noticed. He even surprised Ayla when he appeared so unexpectedly and sat in front of her, looking up at her face. Danella was startled because he had appeared so quickly, but she wasn't afraid.
"Wolf, you've been gone all day. I was beginning to wonder where you were. Exploring the whole area, I think,"
Ayla said, as she rubbed the ruff of fur around his neck and scratched behind his ears. He reached up to lick her neck and chin, then put his head in her lap, seeming to enjoy her welcoming strokes and caresses. When she stopped, he curled up in front of her and laid his head on his paws, relaxed but watchful. Galliadol, along with the others on the platform, watched him. Then the man smiled.
"Our unusual visitor has come at an appropriate time in the story," he said.
Then, back in character, he continued,
"Is that what you want, to be a natural-born hunter?" the old Zelandani asked.
"Yes, that's it. I want to be a natural-born hunter," Wolofon said.
"Then come into my cave," said the old woman.
The tone of the story was no longer at all humorous. It was ominous.
As soon as Wolofon walked into the cave, he became very sleepy. He sat down on a pile of wolf furs and was instantly asleep. When he finally woke up, he felt that he had slept for a long time, but he didn't know how long. The cave was empty, with no sign that it had ever been inhabited. He quickly ran outside.
The young man on the platform ran out of the imaginary cave using both hands and feet.
The sun was shining, and he was thirsty. As he headed for the river, he began to notice that something was strange. For one thing, he was seeing things from a different angle, as though he was lower to the ground. When he reached the edge of the stream, he felt the cold water on his feet as though he didn't have any foot coverings on. When he looked down, he didn't see feet at all. He saw paws, the paws of a wolf. At first he was confused. Then he realized what had happened. The old Zelandani had given him exactly what he asked for. He wanted to become a natural-born hunter. And now he was. He had become a wolf. That wasn't what he meant when he asked to be a good hunter, but it was too late now. Wolofon was so sorry he wanted to cry, but he had no tears. He waited at the water's edge, and in the stillness began to be aware of the woods in a new way. He could hear things he had never heard before, and smell things he hadn't even known existed. He picked up the scent of many things, especially animals, and then he focused on a large rabbit, of white hair, and realized that he was hungry. But now he knew exactly what to do. Quietly, slowly, he stalked the creature. Though the hare was very fast and could turn in an instant, the wolf anticipated his moves and caught him.
Ayla smiled to herself at this part of the story. Most people did believe that wolves and other meat-eaters were born knowing how to hunt and kill their prey, but she knew better. After she had mastered the use of the sling, practicing in secret, she wanted to take the next step, to actually hunt with it. But hunting was forbidden to the women of the clan. Many carnivores often stole meat from Brunn's clan, particularly smaller meat-eaters like martens, stoats, and other weasels, small wild cats, foxes, and middle-sized hunters like vicious wolverines, tufted lynxes, wolves, and hyenas. Ayla justified her decision to defy the clan taboo by resolving that she would hunt only meat-eaters, animals that were destructive to her clan, leaving the hunting of food animals to the men. As a result, she not only excelled as a hunter, but she learned a great deal about her chosen prey. She spent the first few years observing them before she managed to make her first kill. She knew that while the tendency to hunt was strong in meat-eaters, they all had to be taught by their elders in one way or another. Wolves weren't born knowing how to hunt. Young ones learned from their pack. She was drawn back into Galliadol's storytelling.
The taste of warm blood running down his throat was delicious, and Wolofon quickly devoured the hare. He went back to the river for another drink and cleaned the blood off his fur. Then he nosed around, looking for a secure place. When he found one, he curled up, and using his tail to cover his face, he went to sleep. When he woke up again, it was dark, but he could see better at night than he ever had before. He stretched languorously, lifted his leg, and sprayed a bush, then went out hunting again.
The young man on the platform did a good job of mimicking a wolf's actions, and when he lifted his leg, the audience laughed.
Wolofon lived in the cave that had been abandoned by the old woman for some time, hunting for himself and enjoying it, but after a while he began to get lonely. The boy had become a wolf, but he was still a boy, too, and he began to think about returning home to see his mother and the attractive young woman from the south. He headed back toward the cave of his mother, running with the ease of a wolf. When he saw a young deer who had strayed away from its mother, he remembered that the girl from the south liked to eat meat, and decided he would hunt it and bring it to her. When Wolofon got close, some people saw him coming and were afraid. They wondered why a wolf was dragging a deer towards their home. He saw the attractive young woman, but he didn't notice the tall, handsome, fair-haired man standing beside her, holding a new kind of weapon that enabled him to throw spears very far and fast. But as the man was preparing to cast a spear, Wolofon dragged the meat to the woman and dropped it at her feet. Then he sat down in front of her and looked up. He was trying to tell her that he loved her. But Wolofon couldn't speak any more. He could only show his love by his actions and the look in his eyes, and it was obvious that he was a wolf who loved a woman.
All of the people in the audience turned to stare at Ayla and the wolf at her feet, most of them smiling. Some began to laugh, then others started to slap their knees in applause. Although it wasn't quite where Galliadol had intended to end the story, the response from the listeners made him realize that it was a good place to stop. Ayla felt embarrassed to be the center of so much attention and looked at Jandalar. He was smiling too and slapping his knees.
That was a good story,
he said. But none of it is true, she said.
Some of it is,
Jandalar said, looking down at the wolf who was now standing in an alert and protective posture in front of Ayla.
There is a wolf who loves a woman.
She reached down to stroke the animal.
Yes, I think you are right.
Most of the stories that storytellers tell are not true, but they often have some truth in them, or satisfy a desire for an answer. You have to admit it was a good story. And if someone didn't know that you found Wolf as a very young cub alone in his den, with no siblings or pack or mother left alive, Galadriel's story could indulge their wish to know, even if they understood that it probably wasn't true.
Ayla looked at Jandalar and nodded. Then they both turned and smiled at Galadriel and the others on the platform. The storyteller acknowledged them with an elaborate bow. The audience was getting up and moving around again, and the storyteller stepped down from the platform to make room for a different set of people to tell a story. They joined the group around Ayla and Wolf.
It was incredible when the wolf appeared. He came at just the right time, said the young man who had portrayed the boy wolf. It couldn't have been better if we'd planned it. I don't suppose you'd like to come and bring him every night.
I don't think that would be a good idea, Zanakan, Galadriel said. Everyone will be talking about the story we told this evening. If it happened all the time, it would take away the special quality of tonight. And I'm sure Ayla has other things to do. She is a mother and the first's acolyte.
The young man flushed a little red and looked embarrassed.
You're right, of course. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry, Ayla said. Galadriel is right. I have many things to do, and Wolf wouldn't always be here just when you might want him. But I think it would be fun to learn something about storytelling the way you do it. If no one would mind, I'd like to visit sometime when you are practicing.
Zanakan and the others became very aware of Ayla's unusual accent as she spoke, especially because they all knew the effect of different tonal qualities and voices and had traveled around the region much more than most.
I love your voice, Zanakan said.
I've never heard an accent like yours, the young woman said.
You must come from very far away, the other young man added.
Ayla was usually a little embarrassed when people mentioned her accent, but the three young people seemed so excited and genuinely pleased, she could only smile.
Yes, she does come from very far away, much farther than you can imagine, Jandalar said.
We would love it if you came to visit us any time you want while we're here. And would you mind if we tried to learn your way of speaking?
The young woman said. She looked up at Galadriel for approval. The storyteller looked at Ayla.
Galara knows that sometimes our camp is not open to casual visitors. But yes, you would be welcome to visit our camp any time.
I think we could make a wonderful news story of someone who comes from very far away, maybe even farther than the land of the dawning sun, said Zanakan, still full of excitement.
I think we could. But somehow I doubt if it would be as good as the real story, Zanakan,
Galadriel said. Then to Ayla and Jandalar he added,
The children of my hearth sometimes get very excited over new ideas, and you have given them many.
I didn't know Zanakan and Galara were the children of your hearth, Galadriel,
Jandalar said.
And Kalashal, too, the man said. He's the eldest. Perhaps we should make proper introductions.
The young people who had portrayed the characters of the story seemed quite pleased to meet the living counterparts of their tale, especially when they got to Ayla's names and ties, as Jandalar recited them.
May I present to you Ayla of the Zelindanyi,
Jandalar began. When he got to where she came from, he changed the introduction somewhat.
Formerly, she was Ayla of the Lion Camp of the Mamutoi,
the mammoth hunters who live far to the east in the land of the dawning sun, and adopted as daughter of the mammoth hearth, which is their Zelandania. Chosen by the spirit of the cave lion, her totem, who physically marked her, and protected by the spirit of the cave bear, Ayla is friend to the horses, Winnie and Racer, and the new filly, Gray, and loved by the four-legged hunter she calls Wolf. They understood the names and ties that Jondalar brought to the list when they mated, but when he spoke of mammoth hearth and cave lion and cave bear, not to mention the living animals she brought with her, Zanakan opened his eyes very wide. It was a mannerism of his when he was surprised.
"We can use that in the new story," Zanakan said. "The animals, not exactly the same, of course, but the idea of hearths named for animals, and maybe caves, too, and the animals she travels with."
"I told you her real story is probably better than any story we could make up," Galliadol said. Ayla smiled at Zanakan.
"Would you like to meet Wolf, all of you?" she said.
All three young people looked surprised, and Zanakan's eyes opened again.
"How do you meet a wolf? They don't have names and ties, do they?"
"Not exactly," Ayla said. "But the reason that we give our names and ties is to learn more about each other, isn't it? Wolves learn more about people and many things in their world by scent. If you let him smell your hand, he will remember you."
"I'm not sure. Would that be good or bad?" Kalashal said.
"If I introduce you, he will count you as a friend," Ayla said.
"Then I think we should," Galara said. "I wouldn't want to be counted as anything but a friend of that wolf."
When Ayla reached for Zanakan's hand and brought it to Wolf's nose, she could feel the slight resistance, a tendency to pull back at first. But once he realized that nothing bad would happen, his innate curiosity and interest was aroused.
"His nose is cold and wet," he said.
"That means he's healthy. How did you think a wolf's nose should feel?" Ayla said.
"Or his fur. What do you think that feels like?"
She moved his hand to stroke his head and feel the fur along his neck and back. She went through a similar process with the other two young people, while many others stood back and watched.
"His fur is smooth and rough, and he's warm," Zanakan said.
"He's alive. Living animals are warm, most of them. Birds are very warm. Fish are cool. Snakes can be either," Ayla said.
"How do you know so much about animals?" Galara said.
"She's a hunter, and she's caught almost every kind of animal there is," Jondalar said. "She can kill a hyena with a stone, catch a fish with her bare hand, and birds come to her whistle. But she usually lets them go. Just this spring, she led a lion hunt and killed at least two with her spear thrower."
"I didn't lead the hunt," Ayla said, frowning. "Joharan did."
"Ask him," Jondalar said. "He says you led the hunt. You were the one who knew about lions and how to go after them."
"I thought she was a Zelandani, not a hunter," Kalashal said.
"She's not a Zelandani yet," Galliadol said. "She's an acolyte in training, but I understand a very good healer already."
"How can she know so many things?" Kalashal asked, doubt in his tone.
"She had no choice," Jondalar said. "She lost her people when she was a 5-year, was adopted by strangers, and had to learn their ways. Then lived alone for a few years before I found her. Or, I should say, she found me. I had been attacked by a lion. She rescued me and treated my wounds. When you lose everything at such a young age, you have to adapt and learn quickly, or you won't survive. She's alive because she was able to learn so many things."
Ayla was paying attention to Wolf, stroking him and rubbing behind his ears, keeping her head down,
trying not to listen. It always embarrassed her when people talked about her as though the things she had done were accomplishments. It made her feel as though she thought she was important, and that made her uncomfortable. She didn't think she was important, and she didn't like being singled out as different. She was just a woman and a mother who had found a man to love and people like herself, most of whom had come to accept her as one of them. Once she had wanted to be a good clan woman. Now she just wanted to be a good Zelindanyi woman. Lavila walked up to Ayla and Wolf.
"I think they're getting ready to tell the next story," she said. "Are you staying to hear it?"
"I don't think so," Ayla said. "Jandalar may want to stay. I'll ask him. But I think I'll come back another time to listen to stories. Are you staying?"
"I thought I might see if there's anything good left to eat. I'm getting a little hungry, but I'm tired, too. I may go back to our camp soon," Lavila said.
"I'll go with you to get something to eat. Then I have to pick up Janela from your sister."
Ayla took a few steps to where Jandalar and the others were talking and waited until there was a break in the conversation.
"Are you going to stay to hear the next story?"
she asked. "What do you want to do?"
"I'm getting tired, and so is Lavila. We thought we'd go and see if there is anything good left to eat," Ayla said.
"That sounds fine to me. We can come back another time to listen to more stories. Is Jondakam coming?" Jandalar said. "Yes, I am," they heard his voice coming towards them. "Wherever you're going."
The four of them left the storyteller's camp and headed for the area where the food had been gathered together. Everything was cold, but cold slices of bison and venison were still tasty. Globular root vegetables of some variety were soaking in a rich broth that had a thin layer of congealed fat on top, which added flavor. Fat was a desirable quality, relatively rare on free-ranging wild animals, and necessary for survival. Hidden behind some empty bone platters, they found a woven bowl with some round, blue-colored berries left in it, several varieties mixed together, like huckleberries, bearberries, currants, which they gladly shared. Ayla even found a couple of bones for Wolf. She gave one to the canine, which he carried in his mouth until he found a comfortable place to settle down and gnaw on it, near the place where his people ate. Ayla wrapped the other one that had more meat on it in some large leaves that had lined a platter to make a nice presentation to carry back to the camp for later. She tucked the bone into the small one-sided haversack that she used to carry things, especially things for Janela, like a hard rawhide scrap that the baby liked to chew on, a hat and a small extra blanket, some soft, absorbent material like mouflon wool that she stuffed around the baby. She also carried her tinder kit for starting fires in a pouch tied to her waist, and her personal dishes and eating knife. They found some logs with pads on them nearby, obviously dragged there for seating.
"I wonder if any of Mother's wine is left," Jandalar remarked. "Let's go see," Jondakam said. There was not even a drop, but Larimar had noticed them and hurried over with a freshly opened water bag of Barma. He filled the personal cups of both the men, but both Ayla and Lavila said they didn't want much and would just take a sip from the men's drinks. Ayla didn't want to make pleasant talk with the man for too long. After a few minutes, they went back to the logs with pads on them that were near the food. When they finished, they strolled back to Proliva's shelter at the camp of the third cave.
"There you are. You're back early,"
Proliva said after they brushed each other's cheeks in greeting.
"Did you see Joharan?"
"No," Lavila said. "We only listened to one story, then got some food. It was a story about Ayla, sort of."
"Actually, it was about Wolf. It was a story about a boy who turned into a wolf that loved a woman," Jandalar said. "Wolf came and found Ayla right in the middle of it, which pleased Galiadol and the three young people of his hearth who were helping him tell the story."
Janela is still sleeping. Would you like a nice cup of hot tea?
Proliva said.
I don't think so. We're going back to our camp, Ayla said.
You're not going back, too, Valima said to Lavila. We've hardly had any time to visit. I want to know about your pregnancy and how you are feeling.
Why don't you stay here tonight? Proliva said. There's room for all four of you, and Jaredal would love to see Wolf when he wakes up.
Lavila and Jondakam quickly agreed. The camp of the second cave was nearby, and the idea of spending some time with her mother and her sister was appealing to Lavila, and Jondakam didn't mind. Ayla and Jondalar looked at each other.
I really should check on the horses, Ayla said. We left early, and I don't know of anyone who stayed at camp today. I just want to know they are all right, especially Gray. She can be a tempting treat for some four-legged hunter, though I know Winnie and Racer will protect her. I would just feel better going back.
I understand. She's a little like your baby, too, Proliva said. Ayla nodded and smiled in agreement.
And where is my baby?
She's over there, sleeping with Sathona.
It's a shame to disturb her. Are you sure you won't stay?
We'd like to, but one of the problems with having horses as friends is that you feel responsible for them, especially if you keep them in an enclosure that is not closed to four-legged hunters, Jondalar said. Ayla is right. We need to check on them. Ayla had wrapped her child in her carrying blanket and was hoisting the baby onto her hip. She woke briefly, but then settled down next to her mother's warmth and went back to sleep.
I really appreciate your watching her, Proliva. The storytelling was interesting, and it made it much easier to watch and listen without interruption, Ayla said.
It was my pleasure. Those two girls are getting to know each other, and they're starting to entertain each other. I think they're going to be real friends, Proliva said.
It was fun watching them together, Valima said. It's good if close cousins spend time with each other.
Ayla signaled Wolf, who picked up his bone, and they all left the summer dwelling. Jondalar selected a torch that was stuck in the ground, one of many lighting a path outside the shelter, and checked it to see how much burning material was left to make sure it would last until they reached their camp. They left the warm glow of fires in the main camp and moved into the deep, soft obscurity of night. The enveloping darkness wrapped itself around them with an intensity that absorbed the light and seemed to smother the flame of the torch.
It's so dark. There's no moon tonight, Ayla said.
But there are clouds, Jondalar said. They are blocking out the stars. You can't see many.
When did it cloud up? I didn't notice them when we're in camp.
That's because all the fires are distracting, and the light from them fills your eyes. They walked quietly side by side for a while. Then Jondalar added, Sometimes you fill my eyes, and I wish there weren't so many people around.
She smiled and turned to look at him. On our way here, when it was just the two of us and Winnie, Racer, and Wolf, I was often lonely for people. Now we have people, and I'm glad, but sometimes I remember when it was just the two of us, and we could do whatever we wanted whenever we felt like it. Maybe not always, but most of the time.
I think about that, too, Jondalar said. I remember when, if I looked at you and felt you fill my manhood, we could just stop and share pleasures. I didn't have to go with Joharan to meet some people to make arrangements for something or do something for Mother or just see so many people around that there's no place to stop and relax and do what I want with you.
I feel the same way, Ayla said. I remember when I could look at you and feel inside how only you could make me feel and know that if I gave you the right signal, you would make me feel that way again, because you know me better than I know myself. And I wouldn't have to think about taking care of a baby, and maybe several others at the same time, or plan a feast with Proliva, or help Zelindani take care of someone who is sick or hurt, or learn about some new treatments, or remember the 5 sacred colors, or how to use counting words. Although I love all of it, sometimes I miss you, Jandalar. I miss being with just you.
I don't mind having Janela around. I like to watch you with her. Sometimes that fills me even more. But I can wait until she's content. The trouble is that usually someone comes and interrupts, and I have to go someplace, or you do.
He stopped to kiss her tenderly. Then they continued walking in silence. The walk was not long, but as they neared the camp of the 9th cave, they almost stumbled over a cold fireplace before they noticed it. There were no fires anyplace, not a single dying ember or tent glowing from the light within or line of light from a crack between planks. They could smell the vestiges of old fires, but it appeared that no one was there and hadn't been for some time. Every single person from the most populous cave in the region had left their camp.
"No one is here," Ayla said, very surprised. "Everyone is gone. Except for the ones who may have gone hunting or visiting, they must all be at the main camp."
"Here's our dwelling. At least I think it is," Jandalar said. "Let's build a fire inside to warm it up, then go check on the horses."
They brought in some wood and dried aurochs dung patties that had been stacked outside and started a fire in the small fireplace they had created near their sleeping places. Wolf came in with them and parked his bone in a small hole near an area of the wall that was seldom used by anyone but him. Ayla checked the large water bag near the main hearth.
"We should bring in some water, too," she said. "There's not much left in this. Let's go find the horses. Then I'm going to have to feed Janela. She's starting to fuss around."
"I'd better get a new torch. This one will go out soon,"
Jandalar said.
"I should spend some time tomorrow making new ones."
He lit a new torch off the old one, then put the remains of the first in the fireplace. When they left the shelter, Wolf followed them out. Ayla heard him make a low, throaty growl as they approached the fence of the horse surround.
"Something's wrong," she said, hurrying.
Jandalar held the torch high to spread the light it gave off. There was a strange lump of something near the center of the enclosed space. As they neared it, Wolf's growl grew louder. When they got closer, they could see pale gray, spotted, rather fluffy fur with a long tail and a lot of blood.
"It's a leopard. A young snow leopard, I think. It's been trampled to death. What's a snow leopard doing here? They like the highlands,"
Ayla said. She ran toward a roofed shelter they had constructed for the horses to get out of the rain, but it was empty. She called, making it a loud neigh that sounded to Jandalar exactly like a horse. It was the name she had originally given the mare. The name she was called by most people, Whinny, was an accommodation Ayla had made to the language of people. She whinnied again, then blew her special call whistle very loudly. Finally, from a distance, they heard an answering neigh.
"Wolf, go find Whinny,"
she said to the canine. The animal raced off in the direction of the neigh, with Ayla and Jandalar following behind. They went through the fence where the horses had stomped it down to break through, and she understood how they got out. They found all 3 horses near a creek at the back of the area the 9th cave was using for their camp. Wolf was sitting on his haunches guarding them, but Ayla realized he wasn't too close. They had obviously had a bad scare, and somehow the wolf sensed that even the friendly carnivore felt threatening at the moment. Ayla rushed to Whinny, but slowed down when she noticed that Whinny was watching her intently, her mouth tight, her ears, nose, and eyes pointed toward her, focused on her, sometimes swinging her head slightly.
You're still afraid, aren't you?
Ayla began talking to the mare softly in their special language.
I don't blame you, Winnie.
Again she said her name the way a horse would, but more softly.
I'm sorry I left you alone to fight off that leopard by yourselves, and I'm sorry no one was here to hear you when you were screaming for help.
She had been slowly walking toward the horse as she spoke, until finally she reached her and put her arms around the sturdy neck. The horse relaxed, put her head over the woman's shoulder, and leaned into her as Ayla leaned back in the familiar, comforting stance that had been their custom since the early days in the valley. Jandalar followed her lead, whistling his call to Racer, who was also still feeling frightened. He stuck the torch in the ground, then approached the young stallion and stroked and scratched him in his favorite places. The handling by their familiar friends comforted the animals, and soon Gray also joined in, nursing from her dam for a while, then going to Ayla for some affectionate touching and scratching. Jandalar also joined in stroking the little filly, but it was only after the five of them were all together, six including Janela, who was awake and squirming in her carrying blanket, that Wolf joined them. Even though Winnie and Racer knew him from the time he was a four-week-old pup and had helped to raise him, his underlying scent was still of a carnivore, a meat-eater whose wild cousins often preyed on horses. Wolf had sensed their discomfort when they saw him, probably from their scent of fear, and knew to wait until they were comfortable again before approaching them. He was welcomed to the pack of people and horses that he had imprinted on, the only pack he had known. About then, Janela decided it was her turn. She let out a hungry wail. Ayla took her out of her carrying blanket and held her out in front to pass her water on the ground. When she was through, Ayla propped her up on Gray's back for a moment, holding her with one hand while she straightened out the carrying blanket and exposed a breast with the other hand. Soon the infant was wrapped up again, held close to her mother, happily nursing. On the way back, they made a detour around the enclosure, knowing that the horses would never go into it again. Ayla thought that she would get rid of the leopard carcass later, and she wasn't sure about the enclosure. At the moment, she never wanted to put the horses in one again, and would be happy to give the wooden poles and planks to whoever wanted them for firewood, if nothing else. When they reached their lodge, they led the horses around to an area on the back side of the summer dwelling that was used infrequently, where some grass still grew.
"Should we put a halter on them and tie them to a ground stake?" Jandalar said. "It would keep them close by."
"I think it would upset Winnie and Racer after their scare if they couldn't run freely. For now, I think they will want to stay close unless something scares them again, and we'd hear them. I think I'm going to leave Wolf out here to guard them, at least for tonight."
She went to the animal and bent down close.
"Stay here, Wolf. Stay here and watch Winnie and Racer and Gray. Stay and guard the horses."
She wasn't entirely sure if he understood, but when he lowered his hindquarters and looked toward the horses, she thought he might. She pulled out the bone she had tucked away for him and gave it to him. The small fire they had started inside the shelter had long since gone out, so they started a new one, bringing in more fuel to keep it going. About then, Ayla noticed that the nursing was encouraging Janela to generate more than water. She quickly spread out a small pile of soft, absorbent cattail fibers and laid the child's bare bottom on it.
"Jandalar, would you get the large water bag and bring me whatever is left in it so I can clean her up? Then go and fill it with fresh water, and our small one, too," Ayla said.
"She is a smelly little thing,"
he said with an adoring smile at the little girl he thought was utterly beautiful. He found the bowl made of tightly woven osier willow withes with an ochre-stained red cord worked in near the top that was often used to clean especially dirty messes of various kinds. It was marked with the color
so it wouldn't inadvertently be used for